Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
What begins as a medical research assignment quickly turns into a murder investigation. On this episode of This Week in America, author Suzanne Kamis discusses her gripping new novel, Bless Your Heart, a Jeannie Johal thriller, a fast-paced mystery filled with pharmaceutical intrigue, southern charm, and unexpected twist. Healthcare researcher Jeannie Johal arrives in Greenville, North Carolina, to investigate suspicious activity surrounding a promising new drug study. Before she can even begin, well, her new boss is murdered. Suddenly, Jeannie finds herself navigating a maze of hidden motives, dangerous secrets, poisonous plants, and a community where everyone seems to know more than they're willing to admit. Inspired by Suzanne's healthcare experience and her years volunteering as a master gardener, the novel combines authentic medical detail, southern atmosphere, and page-turning suspense into a thriller that keeps readers guessing until the very end. And Suzanne Kamis joins us on today's This Week in America. Suzanne, welcome to the program. Pleasure to have you here. Looking forward to our conversation. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Rick. I'm thrilled to be here.
What a thrilling novel that you have written, Bless Your Heart, getting rave reviews. Let's talk about the inspiration for this. Where did this idea for this story come from?
Well, so the inspiration came from what a famous author said to me. She gave me two very good pieces of advice. One was write what you like, and the second was write what you know. And so I like reading mysteries and thrillers, intelligent thrillers, where there are many subplots, lots of characters who develop, and where action unfolds as the story progresses. In terms of writing what I know, well, I worked in healthcare before moving to Greenville, North Carolina. I was a healthcare leader, and I investigated when patient harm occurred in the workplace. So I used that background, and I combined that with the mystery thriller genres, and decided I would try my hand at a mystery that has a healthcare basis to it or a healthcare element. And the other thing I added, of course, was gardening, because when I was in Greenville, I became a master gardener through Pitt County Arboretum. It was through NC State Extension. And that meant that I got to volunteer every week and I got to know plants quite well. And when I interviewed the Arboretum director, and the Arboretum's just across from where Jeannie works, he told me that about 60% of the plants are poisonous. That was very surprising to me, but it gave me another plot element.
Yes.
And so in response to your question, it was, what do I know and what do I like reading? So I combined the two.
And the result is Bless Your Heart. The book is available wherever books are sold. Suzanne's website, and I'll give you the information as we go through the program, is Suzanne, S-U-S-A-N-N, Kamis, C-A-M-U-S.com. Book, of course, available there. We've got all these links on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. You are very good at storytelling. When did storytelling first become something meaningful in your life? And you decided to shift in that direction.
Well, I've always been an avid reader. As a kid, I would grab a flashlight and read under the blankets well after I was supposed to be in bed and asleep. And I was in bed. I just wasn't asleep. I had discovered that I couldn't read with the overhead light on because the light reflected under the door. And more than once, it was noticed that I still had the light on. So I had to find another way to do that. And then as a teenager, I did something I'm not proud of, but I would do it again. I skipped science classes, especially chemistry, whenever I could get away with it. And I would head to the library. I would look for a quiet corner in the stacks, and I would sit and read novels rather than listen to chemistry lectures. I don't know what got me into more trouble. Was it with my parents for reading under the blankets? Was it with my science teachers for skipping their classes? Again, I wouldn't change that. Although if there are any kids listening, I would encourage them to continue going to class.
Well, it's worked out very nicely for you with a career as an author. This book is Bless Your Heart. Suzanne Kamis is our guest on the program today. Let's go back and talk about your profession outside of writing. And how did you use the knowledge from that profession in writing your book? And are you still working that profession? Or are you a full-time writer now?
Yeah, I'm a full-time writer now. What I can tell you, though, is that over the course of my life, I've worked in very different careers, and some I would call ways to get to different points. So when I was much younger, I, for example, scrubbed the floors and walls of vacation cabins. Wasn't fun work. It wasn't glamorous, but it funded my studies. I worked as a chambermaid in a really disgusting low-key motel that should have been torn down years before it actually was. Again, not fun, but it was a means to an end. And then when I was in university, I started writing for the university newspapers. I then wrote for community newspapers. I wrote for city and business magazines. I worked as a writer editor. Eventually, I transitioned into quality improvement, and that led me to change my career completely to go back to school to study public health. And I became a healthcare researcher, and then I became a consultant in continuous improvement in healthcare, and I became a healthcare leader, where I was tasked with identifying when patients are harmed in hospitals. It shouldn't happen, but it does. And what we did was we investigated so that we could find out why it happened in order to prevent it from happening to the next patient. So I was able to use all of these backgrounds in my novels. And one of the benefits to working these manual jobs was that I came to have pride in whatever I did. I just tried to do it as well as I could. And whether someone is a janitor or a research or a health researcher or the CEO of a health authority, it really doesn't matter. It's how we all do our work, what we bring to the table. And so in my books, and in Bless Your Heart in particular, we have characters from all walks of life with all kinds of life and work experience. And I was able to draw on my own experiences in creating those characters.
And the result is a cast of characters that are very relatable. They actually jump off the page in many cases. These are people that we can relate to of all various income classifications, all of that, and they all blend together, making this a top-selling book. Bless Your Heart. The author is Suzanne Kamis, our guest on the program. Talk about this. You've written another book. This is a sequel that everybody was waiting for, not disappointed when it came out. They were waiting anxiously for this. Talk about the first book and how this series began.
So the first book is called See Me. It's also a Jeannie Johal thriller. It takes place in British Columbia, Canada, on the West Coast, so about 2 hours north of Seattle. And we're introduced to Jeannie in this book. She's a plastic surgeon from Mumbai. She flees her husband and builds a new life for herself in Canada. So in Canada, she works as a quality improvement and patient safety consultant and investigates when patients are harmed in hospital. She's fearless. She starts out being very blunt because she'd been a surgeon. She was accustomed to people doing exactly what she told them to do. She learns she has to listen and listen to everyone, not just the higher ups, but she does learn to listen. She learns to question. She gains more empathy as she develops into a character. She also develops self-confidence in herself. She had been a child bride and controlled by a very domineering husband. In See Me, she learns to fly on her own, to become very independent, and to trust her own judgment. So this is the book that lays the foundation for the series, and this is the first novel.
You know, it's interesting. We see this web of professional rivalries, personal tensions that goes on behind the scenes in the medical world that you're talking about. What were you hoping readers might be able to take away or understand about the human side of these environments? We tend to look at hospitals as sort of sterile facilities, sort of in a literal sense as well. But behind that, you've got like real people with their own little foibles that are dealing with our lives. Talk about that and exposing all of that. And what do you hope the takeaway is for the reader?
Yeah, I was hoping to expose the bad and the good.
Yes.
What I wanted to say was that what I was trying to do was provide a snapshot of a hospital, since I had the privilege of working in them for 10 years and with nurses, surgeons, people of all stripes and kinds of patients as well. And when I think of a hospital, what I think of is, well, when you go into a hospital, if you're going in for an operation, you have the expectation that it'll go well. If you need medication, you have the expectation that you'll be given the right medication in the right dose. If you have an infection, you have the expectation that the treatment you're given will lessen or remove or eliminate the infection, and you'll go home better. But that's not always the case, unfortunately. People do get hurt or harmed in hospital. They may suffer terribly. They may suffer less. They may even die as a result of mistakes that are made. And so I wanted to portray that, because we're all human, including physicians and nurses. They are very, very exceptional people, and they continue to inspire me, and I continue to marvel at their level of dedication. But they're also human. That means they're not perfect. They can and do make mistakes. They're overworked. Very often, they don't have the resources they need to do the best work they possibly can. There's also technology. Technology is a wonderful innovator, but technology can fail. Systems can fail. Mistakes can be made at all levels. And in the hospital setting itself, you have people who work very closely together with each other for many, many hours in a week. They spend more time with each other than they do with their own families. And so it's not uncommon for people to have romantic relationships as a result of being in such close proximity for hours and hours every day or every week, even if they are married. And so I wanted to portray the hospital, portray it as a microcosm, portray these different elements, portray the competition for resources, show what the rivalries between surgeons may be. There can, for example, be a competition for operating time. And I'm sure there's a competition for getting whom they consider to be the best workers to work alongside them. So the hospital is a great place for material. It provided me with tremendous fodder for my material. And I am providing a snapshot, a microcosm, but I also do want to emphasize this is a work of fiction. So rest assured, a lot of this is based in fact, but it also comes from my imagination.
As someone myself, unfortunately, had to spend some time in a hospital, they're 24 hours a day for a number of days, and you see behind the scenes the interaction. I remember looking out the window and the shift coming in, and seeing all these different people, different nationalities, different religions, all coming in to work together for the common cause of making people healthy and getting them out of there and sending them home. And I'm thinking, boy, as a society, I wish we could work like that all together. They're all coming in, forgetting any differences they have, working together on the relationships between the nurses and the doctors and all of that that you had mentioned. It really comes to life in your book, Bless Your Heart. The book is by Suzanne Camus. That's C-A-M-U-S. If you're Googling, the book available wherever books are sold. Social media. Where can we find you on social media? You're pretty much all over the place, aren't you?
So I have a website, and I have to tell you a little story here. It's funny, but it's a cautionary tale for other writers. when I was just about finished my novel, I signed up for a writer's conference in New York, this really big conference called Thriller Fest. And I signed up for it because many of my favorite authors were speaking there. So I thought I could learn a lot from them. I did, but I came away from there absolutely gobsmacked. And that was because they were telling me that I should spend 40% of my time on marketing, on promotion. And I just said, no, I'm a writer. I don't do that. I write. Well, what I learned was that writing is both a craft and a business. And I was further told that I should have built a website at least 6 months earlier before I was about to finish my first novel. So you ask, do I have a social media presence? I didn't then, didn't have any kind of social media presence. I used email. That was about it. I did presentations. So I do now have a website. You can see the address on the screen. It's my name with .com. I'm on Pinterest. I'm on Instagram and various other places. And one of the things that I occasionally do is I drop a vignette or a short story relating to the book or to gardening or to some other interest. And many of these are very short stories that have a humorous twist to them. I put those on social media as a way of reminding people that I'm here, that I'm present, that I'm active.
That's interesting. As you talk to authors, they realize there's more to this than writing. That's a part of it. That's the part that I enjoy. But now I'm in marketing. Now I'm a business person. I've got contracts. I have to make business decisions. Talk about the reality of that. Well, you mentioned that, wow, it like slapped you around when you first realized what all you had to do. There's much more to get your product out there, isn't that? So you can share it with people.
There very much is. It's been a journey of discovery for me. I can't say I'm as comfortable as a 15-year-old on social media, but I have been coached. I have some eager teenagers who are willing to work with me and a couple of skeptical 4- and 5-year-olds who say, look, this isn't rocket science. You can do it. So it's happening.
Yeah, it's always interesting. You got to go to somebody younger, a lot younger in most cases, to get us through all of these things. I'm still working on my fax machine, and that's passed me by several decades now. So you're trying to adapt to something that's quite challenging at times. What do you hope readers take away from the novel? You've got so much going on here. And I want to say something, too. When you mentioned behind the scenes and dealing with all this, you do deal with science and mystery and all of this without confusing people. Sometimes they get caught up in science and want to show all of their knowledge and go maybe a little bit too far and leave us behind. You've been able to balance all of that. How challenging has that been for you to use that knowledge, set the scene, but tell the human story?
Well, so there's something interesting about me. I like to think of it as interesting rather than pathetic, for example. I studied English as an undergraduate and a graduate student. I worked in the arts. And then 30 some years later, I transitioned into healthcare. I had to take statistics courses. I didn't know anything about statistics. I hated math as a student in high school, but I had to get through it. I say this because I'm not your typical public health scientist. I'm not your typical science person. I come from an arts background. The advantage to that is when I look at science, I look at it from the perspective of someone like me, not someone who's gifted with numbers or scientific facts. I want to know why things happen. And to understand it, I have to break it down into simple, non-technical terms for myself. So I like to think I've been able to do that for my readers as well.
And we thank you for doing that. We can enjoy the story and not get lost in all this. What does this mean? And she lost me a couple of pages ago, and I'm trying to get caught up now in the storyline. The book is Bless Your Heart. It's very, very entertaining. It jumps out right from the very first page. We can't wait to get and see how the story develops. What do you hope the takeaway is when people finish Bless Your Heart? What do you hope it is they look back fondly on in the book?
So first and foremost, it's a work of fiction, so I hope they enjoy it. It could be a beach read or a very relaxing read, but it can also be read on a very different level, on multiple levels. And what I would really like them to take home from it is a message of optimism, a message of hope, that no matter what the circumstances, no matter how difficult things seem, they can and they will get better. Now, my characters are a product of their experiences and their environments. They react to each other based on what they themselves have experienced. And so my characters are very different. Some are hard-headed, and I would say rather cold-hearted healthcare executives. Others are very compassionate healers. As you mentioned earlier, they come from all income levels, all walks of life. Well, what I discovered and what my characters discovered is that when they take the time to talk to each other, when they take the time to listen to each other, they learn. They may not agree with each other, but they learn to respect each other. And that forms the basis, the foundation for a relationship. And I think that is really important, both in the novel and beyond the novel. And that's what I would like readers to take away with them long after they've finished reading the book.
You give us an excellent glimpse into human behavior as well. We see the bad side, the dark side, the corruption, betrayal, manipulation. You leave a little room in there for redemption and resilience. So often we see this as a black and white world. You resist seeing the world in simple binaries of good and evil. Why was that important for you to explore in your storytelling, the complexity of that in the story, Bless Your Heart?
It was important for me because I think it is much more realistic, not as dramatic as saying people are good, people are evil, the world is good, the world is bad. But I really do believe, again, that people are a product of their environment and their experiences. Think about people you know who have experienced tremendous hardship. Some are able to rise above those circumstances. Some have difficulty doing that. Some are able to bounce back from tragedy. Some become embittered. We all have heroic qualities in us. I really do believe that. It is to differing degrees, but we all have that potential. And it's something we need to keep working on. Now, I left room for redemption because as a person, as a human, I very fully believe in redemption. I am an optimist. I believe that goodness and kindness will always win out over greed, over immorality, over bad things. I really do believe that. I have to believe that as a person, and I believe that as a writer. And lucky for me, and lucky for my readers, I think, I get to control the story. I get to decide yeah. how the characters will behave, what will happen to them. I enjoy watching them unfold, watching them develop, but I can tell you that as the author, I get to control the ending, and that means that I will always end my story on a hopeful note.
Well, in reading reviews, that's one thing that stands out. They like the way it ended. So often we read a book, even watch a television series. We're really into it. It ends, and it's like, you're kidding me. It's over. I'm not fulfilled at the end. That's not the case with Bless Your Heart. That's not the case with the first book that you'd written as well. I want to mention, on your website, you've got pictures of the locations of both of your books. Talk about that, because it really brings the city alive. In this case, you know, it's part of the story, isn't it? It's almost a character.
Very much part of the story. And one of the reviewers wrote that she thought I was writing grace notes to Greenville. So what I tried to do in describing Greenville was to show some of the locations, some of the gardens, the Arboretum, as a place where people can visit, where people can not pick flowers like Jeannie's boss did, but admire them, walk through them, stroll through them, relax, reflect. There is a brewery mentioned in Kinston that manufactures incredible craft beer. I mentioned it. Why not? There's a place that offers 40 types of bourbon. I don't drink bourbon. I should quietly say that. But for those who do, it's a great place to visit. So there are all these places to visit in the city. I wanted to highlight them. And in the first book, I also provide photos of Vancouver. It is one of the most beautiful cities I've ever visited or lived in. And I thought, yeah, I can provide some snapshots of local gardens, of the harbor, of the downtown, of the SkyTrain majestically ascending over the Fraser River. Those are little extras, I guess you could say, because I'm trying to help the reader become more involved in the plot to see where the setting actually takes place.
And that first book is See Me. This book is Bless Your Heart, behind the scenes for both of those on the website. And that really helps a reader, right? Vancouver, most people have not been there. They've heard great things about it. All of a sudden it comes to life as you're looking through the pictures on Suzanne's website. And it's like, this really is a neat place. In fact, I wouldn't mind visiting there, but I'm going to, at least through the book that she's provided through See Me. And in this case, with Bless Your Heart. A couple minutes left in the program. I want to talk about creating the character. You've got a heroine that readers really connect with. What makes Jeannie different from the typical mystery detective? We really like her. We like the transformation. We like the way she conducts her daily life. What is it that makes her different?
Jeannie is very human. She's flawed in that she starts out being very judgmental. She can't understand, for example, why there's a health manager who's making really simple mistakes. She's saying, doesn't she know? Well, no, she didn't know. And so the old Jeannie would have clamped down on her and said, you're doing it wrong. The new Jeannie helps her along so that she continues to want to work with Jeannie afterwards. So Jeannie is very complex. She started out as a child bride. She was married when she was 14. She comes from a very humble background in India. She rises to become a plastic surgeon, working with children with cleft palates, operating on women who have been the victims of acid attacks because they questioned authority or wanted to do more than their husbands or fathers or brothers or others wanted them to do. And of course, I'm generalizing here, and this is fiction. I have to say that again. This is very much a product of my somewhat twisted imagination, but it has its basis, in fact. So Jeannie is very complex. She struggles. I don't want to give away some plot spoilers, but there are times in the book where she's doubting herself. She's realized she's made errors. She's not sure how to fix them. She has to try different things in order to reach the point where what she's doing works. And I think we can all identify with that. Yes. And I think we all cheer when she does overcome those obstacles, when she does manage to be graceful, and when she learns new skills and is able to better cope. We're all like that to a different degree. She's building her self-confidence. And I know as a woman, I look at that and I cheer and I go, you go, you keep doing that. And so at the start of the novels, she dresses in very dark colors. She has cropped her hair short. She's changed her eye color to conceal what she looks like because her husband is looking for her. By bless your heart, she's wearing bright primary colors. She's wearing red suits. She's wearing high heels instead of flats. Her hair is very glamorously styled. So she's evolved. She's become much more comfortable in expressing herself and in being seen. And so See Me itself, as the book title, is a call, a plea. See me, I'm visible. Here I am. Accept me for what I am. We do. And then in Bless Your Heart, we see her drawing on her skills, drawing on all of this personal growth to help others.
You know, it's a real person that you've created, and she really is resonating with the readers of both books, See Me and Bless Your Heart. You worked in healthcare for a number of years. What's one thing that medical thrillers get completely wrong? Is there something that when you watch or read, you go, no, that would never happen?
I'm not sure about that. What I would say, though, is that what gave me the greatest satisfaction was to portray the people in healthcare. It was to show that they are human. They are superheroes, but they're also human. And I wanted to show those human qualities. Now, you asked if there is something that thriller writers of healthcare books get wrong. I don't know. I'm very protective of other writers because writing is a hard job. I admire anyone who's able to write a book, keep at it, and finish it. So all I can say is that in my case, it's the human aspects of healthcare that really, truly, deeply interest me. And so they have been my area of focus, perhaps more than other thriller writers in the same genre.
Well, as I said before, you do an excellent job in bringing out these people, the interaction of the personalities. And it's amazing behind the scenes when you see what goes on, what goes into the healthcare system. The book is so well done. Bless your heart. Bless your heart. For people outside of the South, what does that mean? Explain where that expression came from.
So I'd never heard that expression before moving to Greenville, North Carolina. And during my first 6 months, people said it to me on a daily basis. And I thought, wow, I knew that the South is religious. I knew that this was a Bible Belt area. People really are kind. They come up to me. They really don't know me. These are strangers in most aspects. And they say, bless your heart to me. And then a neighbor took me aside and said, Suzanne, you obviously don't know this, but those words have multiple meanings. What you're being told is that you're making mistakes. And I said, no, they're not saying that. They're giving me a blessing. It's wonderful. The people here are so warm, so kind. And she said, and they are that, but they're telling you you've done something inappropriate. And so me being from Canada and being much more accustomed to dealing with people who will ask a question directly or say something directly, I was saying, well, if I'm making a mistake, tell me, because if I don't know, I can't correct it. So bless your heart has many different meanings. There's a good side and a not so good side. And the reason I say not so good side was because if you don't know that you're doing something that isn't in keeping with the community norms, you can't change it. You can't improve it. And as a final point, I'll give you an example. This very neighbor who became my closest friend, a few weeks before I was leaving North Carolina to move to Florida, I was trimming my tree. And she said, oh, thank God, I've been waiting years and years for you to do that. And I said, no, you once mentioned that I might consider trimming the lower limbs. And I did that. And she said, yeah, but you should have trimmed one more foot. So for six years, she was looking at this tree on a daily basis and thinking she should have trimmed one more foot. If I'd known, I would have done it that first day. So that's bless your heart. And that's my experience with it.
About time to wrap up here, and I hate doing that because I'm enjoying a conversation, but where does this mystery go from here? We've got Jeannie, where we really like the character, we like your storytelling ability. What happens next for you?
So what happens next? I'm almost finished my third book.
Oh, good.
It is set in Florida. Jeannie is on vacation with her colleague Kathleen from Vancouver, but It's an inexpensive vacation because they're trying to save. So they have found a home in an active 55-plus community resort. It's a beautiful place, wonderful pools, lots of landscaping. But strange things happen there. People keep disappearing. And we don't know why. Is it because they're forgetting where they are as a reflection of advancing age? Is it that they are taking off on wild adventures? Is it that the alligators are especially active? Who knows? I would encourage you to read it when it comes out to find the answers to those questions.
Well, you've got my interest, and I can't wait to read the book, and hopefully we'll have a chance to talk about that as well. Our guest, Suzanne Camus, that's the name of the website, so I'm going to spell it for you, Susann, and Camus is Camus. SuzanneCamus.com is the website. Book available, of course, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, all of the usual places, and a link on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. And I'd like to thank Christian Works Media for arranging our conversation today, Dream Big and Succeed, dedicated in helping others and authors promote their creations and their services, ChristianWorksMedia.com. Suzanne, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us on the program. Love what you've doing with Junie. Can't wait for the new book and the reflection of what's going on here in Florida. I've seen some of that as well as the hospitals and what goes on in Florida, so you've got my interest on that. Thank you for joining us on the program.
Thank you very much, Rick. It's been my pleasure.
A pleasure having you with us. And again, Suzanne Camus, Camus. You can listen to this interview and all of our interviews on 28 podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeart, Odyssey, Audible, Google, TuneIn, and many more. Also, you'll find us on LinkedIn, Facebook, YouTube, X, Blue Sky. We're all over the place. So check us out. And while there, subscribe for more inspiring conversations.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.